Welcome back, friends. This is Ron Jacobs, your host for Architecture Information here on ArtCast. And today we're going to be talking about, well, the most amazing new plumbing to come along in a number of years. It's Windows Communication Foundation. Some people are like, it's just plumbing. Yeah, but can your plumbing do secure, reliable, transacted messages? I'm telling you, it's way better plumbing. You know, get rid of those old lead pipes, okay? Because we've got something way, way, way better in the works. And you know what? It's the kind of thing that you don't have to wait a long time for now. You can actually download the stuff, start writing services, and get going with it right away. And it's about time because, hey, we needed it. Okay, so let's welcome Ami Vora.
I'm here today in studio with Amy Vora.
Actually, it's Ami Iran.
Oh, what? How lame is that?
Clearly we didn't rehearse this well enough.
Okay, Ami. Okay, see, and I, you know what? I don't think I even had met you until we were in Sydney a couple months back.
Don't tell people I went to Sydney.
What's wrong with that?
They'll wonder whether I'm doing any work.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, but that's the work of a product manager, isn't it? It's, you know, you have to suffer and get out there on those long flights, and that's what we do.
It's a great job.
All right. But, you know, it's kind of funny because here we are in Redmond, and yet, you know, we don't meet until we go to the other side of the planet, right? Okay. But that's the way it is around here. So you're going to be talking to us today about building secure and reliable services.
That's right. This is actually the third in a series of webcasts that I'm posting to the WindowsCommunication.net site. So we started with what was actually the keynote at Sydney, where we met, which is a general overview and motivation of why we're building Indigo, why we're building WCF, what we expect it to do, what sort of impact we think it'll have on you. And then the next talk was a lap around Indigo or programming WCF, where we talked about basically how clients and services talk. What we're going to do here is talk about security and then switch gears and talk about reliability.
Okay, good. See, and you kind of let the I word slip there. Indigo was the code name. You know, I don't know if you knew this, but I used to be on the Indigo team.
I did not know that.
Way back in 2003. And when we were in very, very early days of that, of the Indigo, I was working on manageability. But here I am now with you. And so we're going to talk about all these wonderful things with security and reliability. Let's just dive right into security, because of all the things, when I talk to customers about web services, and a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm really nervous about the security of web services. I'm not sure that it's ready for prime time yet. And are we entering a new era with security in Windows Communication Foundation? Is it really ready?
Absolutely. I think that what WCF actually does for web services is bring it to the tipping point, sort of. It makes it a lot more viable to produce web services that are things, you know, you would use in an enterprise environment, things that include reliability, include security, things that are not really easy to do with web services today.
Yeah, okay. And so, I mean, obviously, one of the first things people want to talk about is, well, can I do like your typical business-to-business thing across the internet? Dangerous to do without security, obviously. We wouldn't want to go there. But how does it help us with this?
Well, you know, security means a lot of things to a lot of people. And in this talk, what we're going to talk about is security at the messaging level. So at the messaging infrastructure level, WCF can actually help you out. We can't do things like protect you from a DOS attack on a web server. We can't give you physical security. You know, we can't post a guard at your network cluster. But what we can do is make it easy for you to enforce your security policy at the messaging level. So I wanted to motivate the discussion with a couple of scenarios, just to give you an idea of what sort of decisions you would need to make. Here I've got a business-to-business supply chain app. So consider a factory floor, just a manufacturing plant. We've got a factory floor manager who notices we're running low on a particular part, so he walks over to a machine on the floor itself and places an order with a procurement web service. So we own the procurement web service. They're all part of the same factory infrastructure. That procurement web service then goes out over the internet and places orders with various suppliers. So there are a couple of things to think about when you're designing a security policy for this scenario. Of course, we've got the word internet in there, as you pointed out, and that's scary. So we need to guard against what we're sending across the internet.
You know, it's funny that you say that. You know, this is just a total out of the clear blue. But when we first started talking about internet, The last thing I thought internet would ever be was scary. This is kind of funny how that ended up happening. Anyway.
A scary but wonderful place. So if we're going to be passing things like which parts we're ordering or how many parts we're ordering, or if anything like that is a trade secret, you know, we need to make sure that no other attackers have access to the information we're passing over the internet. Another thing to keep in mind is that we don't know anything about the suppliers. The supplier is just out there, and we are ordering with whoever happens to be the right suppliers. We don't know what platform they're running on. We don't know what applications they're using. So we can't make any assertions about what they're going to be doing. So whatever we do with them, if we want it to be secure, it needs to be interoperable security. It's got to work on any platform. So that is one. That's one scenario. Let's just go down to another. Here I'm thinking of something like Expedia or Orbitz, a travel booking, whatever you use to get away. And as you've already mentioned, Ron, I get away a lot.
Yeah, me too.
We've got a user who's just sitting at their home machine, and they're placing an order with this travel booking application over the internet. Now, that travel booking application is going to go out and talk to a couple of different web services in order to fulfill any order that the customer is presenting. So it can go talk to the travel packages web service to figure out what packages are available, what vacations are out there. And then it can go talk to the booking web service, which actually holds all the calendaring information and the customer information. Those web services are pulling all of their information from data stores, product catalogs, and booking databases. So some of the things we have to think about here are we've got a user, just an end user in the scenario. We don't know what platform they're running on. We don't know what software they're using. We really can't expect them to manage a lot of certificates or do anything complicated with security. So we need to make things as easy as possible for them. You have to think about a lot of things when you think about security. And here, one of the things you have to think about is travel is a seasonal industry. So we've got to design a performant security policy here so that it can handle, this whole scenario can handle a peak load during a vacation spike. So those are just some of the things to keep in mind as we walk through designing a security policy.
Okay, so in a nutshell, we need to make sure that these conversations are secure, that people can't eavesdrop on them, that they can't tamper with messages and spoof us and that sort of thing. Give me the bottom line nutshell security requirements here.
Well, what we can do for you are two things. We secure message exchange between entities, and we secure access to resources. And just to make sure we're on the same page with vocabulary, an entity is someone who wants something or wants to do something. So that's a person or a company or an application or a user. A resource is something that is desired. So that's like a file or information, service, operation. What these two actions boil down to is a bunch of security requirements of the sort you just mentioned. These are the ones I think are the most important. It's not a complete list, but it gives you the basics of security. So we've got confidentiality. When I send you a message, how can we make sure that no attacker, there's no Eve who's going to see what I'm sending you? Mm-hmm. There's integrity. When I send you a message, is the message I sent the same as the one you have received? So can we make sure Eve hasn't tampered with it? There's authentication. You receive a message. How do you know it's actually from me? There's authorization. Now that you've received a message, you know it's from me, you know that it's the same message that I sent, and you know that no one has seen it, am I actually allowed to do the things that I'm asking for? Do I have access to the resources I'm requesting? And the last security requirement I'll mention here, which we won't get to talk about, is auditing. Just setting up some sort of way to go back and look at anything that might have gone wrong.
Yeah, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of times where you're going to need to be able to demonstrate, you know, after the fact, who sent the messages, when they were coming and going, those sorts of things. So now, this is the interesting thing of what makes this all work is this concept of a credential. And it's kind of interesting because really the way in which we thought about identifying people and things is changing a little bit with this kind of service-oriented architecture, especially when you get multiple businesses involved.
Sure. The way we figure out those messaging security requirements like confidentiality and integrity and authorization is by using a credential. And a credential, at its most concrete, is a token on the wire. A credential carries certain claims, and a claim is just a statement about an entity. So a claim is, I am Alice. Or it could be more complicated. It could be, I am Alice, and I have access to this resource. There are a couple of other important bits in a credential. There's the issuer, the person who's actually certifying that claim, who's vouching for the claim, and there's a proof of possession, how an entity can prove that the claim is for it. I generally like to give some real-world examples. So in the real world, the scenario that comes to mind most, and this is going to make me sound terrible, but, you know, going to a bar and getting access to the resource of alcohol.
What? You go to a bar?
I know. No one will believe it.
Oh, you're kidding me.
So, for instance, last night I was out with a friend and we were going to a bar because, you know, we were Wednesday night drinkers in this Pacific Northwest.
That's really tragic.
No, it's lovely.
Okay.
And so if we look at that, what happens is that we are prompted for a credential because we're trying to get access to a secured resource. If we lived in an identity-based world, we would go in and just give our names. And the bartender would have this big book. Yeah. And in the book would be the list of everyone who could possibly walk into the bar and whether or not they have access to the resource. But that doesn't scale very well. It's very difficult to maintain, and it would be very difficult to carry around a book like that. So instead, what we do in the real world is the same thing that we do in the WCF security model, which is prompt for a credential. So I'm prompted for a credential. I pull out my credential, which is my driver's license. And my driver's license makes several claims. It says, this is my name, I'm licensed to drive in a particular state, I live at this particular address. It also has a claim of my age. The issuer of this credential is the great state of Pennsylvania, the state where I'm from. And the state of Pennsylvania is who is certifying all those claims in the credential.
But you don't have a Washington driver's license yet?
Don't tell anyone.
You're in trouble, man. Okay.
And the proof of possession here, yeah. How I can prove that I'm the one providing these claims is the not one but two funny-looking pictures on my driver's license that show pretty well it could only be me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of a credential in the real world. In software, we've got some more common credentials. We've got username, password. We've got a Kerberos token. We've got an X509 certificate that also gives us a valid from duration.
Okay, so of course the difference there is that like the username and password is something like that big book, the identity based thing, isn't it? Though I mean, it's kind of, you have to know who all the users are and what their passwords are. Whereas with a something like a certificate, it's more like the driver's license. It's like, oh, I trust the certificate authority that issued that, and you know, I trust them to have verified your birth date and whatever, and so, yeah.
Well, you know, username and password often can carry the same claims, mm-hmm. because you've got to have an issuer for the username, and the password can be used as verification. So all of those are valid credential types.
Okay, got it. All right, so the security model is based on this idea of claims. Now, one of the things that we like to say around here is that we're secure by default. How is WCF secure by default?
Well, when we say secure by default, what we mean is that unless you are specifically using a binding that's for interoperability purposes, for interoperability with existing web services, you will get some security in our standard bindings. So if you don't want security, you're actually going to have to go in and turn things off. The security model is also consistent across a bunch of things. Because the security model abstracts away from, for instance, how the service communicates, it's consistent across bindings. And a binding specifies how to communicate with a service. So what that means is that if today you are writing a service that will communicate over HTTP, and if tomorrow your boss comes in and says, actually, we need the service to communicate over TCP too for efficiency or something, you don't need to go back and rethink your security policy. Instead, you can just change the transport you're using, and the security policy is abstracted away from that. So you don't need to change the code that determines security.
Oh, that's very cool, because you know, in the existing world, like if where we rely a lot on the transport level to provide security, if you change the transport, everything changes, and your whole security model might be different.
Well, if you can still use transport security with WCF, and of course, that's still a concern then.
Yeah.
But if you're using message-level security, it doesn't necessarily have to be.
Right, okay.
The WCF security model is also consistent across credentials. And what that means is that if today you're supporting, let's say, username password, and tomorrow you get a new partner and you need to start supporting, let's say, X509 certificates, you don't need to go back and rethink your security policy. You can just start supporting a new credential type. Because under the covers, what we're doing with credentials, what WCF does with credentials, is map them to a standard set of claims. So as long as we can pull those claims that we need out of the credential type, it doesn't matter to us what sort of credential you hand us.
Okay. So that's very cool. It makes it easy to do things. So now, if we get back to that business-to-business scenario, how does this solution work in that environment?
Well, here we've just got one possible solution, you know, out of a million. This is just an example I came up with to show you one way of doing this. Now, we own everything in that left gray box. We own the supply chain application and the procurement web service because they're all part of our factory infrastructure. So we can make assertions about them. We can say, you know, they're going to be running Windows, and we can then use a Kerberos token for them to communicate with each other. So we just set up an Active Directory Kerberos Key Distribution Center that can provide keys to anyone on the network, anyone on our internal network who wants them. So the supply chain application can use its Kerberos token to authenticate itself to the procurement web service. Now, we can't do that over the internet because a Kerberos token isn't usually interoperable. Instead, what we can do is use an X509 certificate to talk to that ordering web service. And X509 certificates support both encryption and data signing, which means that our message that we're sending is confidential and we've got integrity on it. So that means any information we're sending in there, whether it's part numbers or price for parts, is not going to be tampered with, so we'll get exactly what we ordered, and nobody else can see it, so we're not giving away any trade secrets.
Okay, terrific. And then if we look at the travel booking application, we have some different options here.
Sure. And what I've done here is said that the user will talk to the travel booking application over SSL. Mm-hmm. We don't want them to have to deal with certificates or anything weird, so they're going to do username password over HTTPS. Then the travel booking application can go up, can use that information to go up to a security token service inside our network and request a Kerberos token from it. Then that travel booking application can use that same Kerb token to talk to whatever different web services it needs to. That means we're only doing that authentication once, which is going to help us with performance here. Another way we can be helped with performance is by using a trusted subsystem approach, which might be a little bit controversial, in which we say that if any requests come to these data stores, we will trust them, because if any request made it through to them, it must be part of our system. We've taken care of security somewhere else. So that means we could do, let's say, ID propagation, so we could see who's making these requests, but we don't need to do separate bits of authentication every time. Once again, these are just possible solutions, definitely not the only, probably not even the best. These are just examples.
Well, and speaking of that security token service, some of my friends in the Patterns and Practices team just recently put out a SAML security token service. It's built on WSI 3.0 right for now, but it'll be a WCF version later, and that would be another very cool option because a lot of people are really interested in using SAML. But now you mentioned transport security. So, you know, how does transport security work?
Well, there are two general kinds of security in WCF. There's security at the transport level and security at the messaging level. So in transport security, the transport layer satisfies our security requirements. So we're using HTTPS or SSL or SFTP, one of the secure transports. Some of the advantages to this are that we get performance benefits. We've known about HTTPS. We've been using it for a long time. So we've been able to optimize it for the best performance. Another advantage for using HTTPS is that it's a pretty common implementation at this point. If you want to support HTTPS, you don't need to go out and invest in new hardware, software, knowledge, or anything. You can probably just start supporting it. Of course, there are some disadvantages. One of them is that you can only carry a very small set of claims over HTTPS. You can't support arbitrary credentials. You can't support arbitrary claims. And another disadvantage is that if all the security is transport security, if it's on the wire, that means that as soon as a message comes off the wire, it's no longer secure. You've stripped away any security. So if your message needs to be secured, even when it's inside the application or inside the service, transport security is not going to do it alone. But let's step through an example of how the code constructs you would use here. This looks exactly like any endpoint we would define in a configuration file. As you can see, we're using the HTTPS transport here, and all we do in our configuration is tweak that we are using security mode equals transport, and we're specifying that our transport client credential type equals none, which means anonymous. So it's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Looks pretty easy.
The next sort of security is message security, in which all the security requirements are satisfied at the message layer. So the advantages of this are that there are more credential types built in, and the credential types are extensible, so we can support really whatever credentials you want. We also can secure selected parts of messages, which is good for performance, and you get end-to-end security. So that means until you actually negotiate away security inside the service itself, that message will still be secure. So app-to-app, end-to-end, until you process the message is still secure.
You know, and what's interesting about this is that I remember in the early days of Indigo when we were talking about the security requirements, we had the sense that someday a lot of message traffic would be traveling over public networks, and maybe messages would get handled by a lot of untrusted parties. And as they flowed between point A and point B, and it might be very necessary to secure messages at the message layer.
Absolutely. However, there are some disadvantages right now, mostly because message security is still evolving. The standards and usage are still solidifying, so we kind of want to make sure we're doing best practices. So it's not always the easiest thing to do because there aren't really best practices yet. And there is some performance impact because it's just more expensive to have to deal with doing encryption or signing at the message level.
Right, okay.
And message security looks exactly the same as transport security, only now we're using security mode equals message. You can see that we're using the HTTP transport again. We're not using a secure transport, but the security happens at the message level.
Now, you were saying that so earlier you were talking about interoperable services. So this security is interoperable or not?
It can be configured to be so, depending on which credential type you're using. So
okay.
If you're using an X509 certificate, that's usually interoperable. But for instance, a Kerberos token or username password on a Windows domain isn't.
Oh, right. Okay.
So you might be asking, well, I want the best of both worlds. You just told me about transport and message security. And I can't promise you the best, but I can promise you a compromise. And that's what we call mixed mode. When you use mixed mode, some of the security requirements are satisfied at the transport level, and the rest are satisfied at the message level. So what this gives you are the performance benefits of using a secure transport, but the rich credentials and the extensibility of letting a message layer carry the claims.
Now, that's real interesting. So, for example, then we wouldn't encrypt the message body because maybe we're doing SSL, and so that's going to encrypt things.
Sure.
Right, okay.
And, you know, that looks exactly like the others. You can see that, once again, we're using a secure transport. We've got HTTPS back in the address. But we've also got some message security. Our security mode is now transport with message credential, which may turn into mixed, depending on how much we like typing.
Yeah, that's kind of a long, ugly name, isn't it? Yeah.
We've got a lot more code constructs that will help you enforce the sort of security policy you want. So I just want to step through them really quickly.
Okay, great.
You can do username password, of course, and all you do there is set a username password field on the credentials that you're using in your client. You can do impersonation if you're worried about permissions. So if you want to run something on your service with the permissions of the client, you can just impersonate that client within your service. You can also demand the client be a member of a particular group or a particular role. So here we're going to require that the client be a member of the admin role, of the administrator's role, in the Windows Groups principal permission mode. I wanted to touch on one more thing briefly, and that's federated credentials. So let's consider, have you ever tried to manage certs?
Oh, yeah, what a nightmare that becomes. It's a big, big headache, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it gets worse, you know, the more machines you have to manage.
That's
so
right, yeah.
let's consider you've got a network with 100 machines. Each machine needs to talk to all the other machines, which means that every machine needs to have 100 certificates installed on it.
Uh-huh.
Which is already a nightmare. But then what happens when a new machine joins that network? Well, then the existing 100 machines need to add, each of them needs to add one more certificate.
Right.
And that new machine needs to install 101 certificates.
Yeah.
Definitely not the most fun thing you could do.
Right.
Federated credentials are one way around that. When we use federated credentials, we have a third party as part of that network that will issue new credentials. So the way that works is if a client wants to talk to a service, the client will provide its own certificate to a credential issuer. Here the client has an X509 certificate that says, I'm Alice. So it hands that to the credential issuer. The credential issuer examines that credential and says, okay, yes, you're Alice, I believe it. Here is a credential of a different type. Here is a credential that says the same thing, only it's a SAML token. Now that client can take that credential that was just issued to it and go talk to the service, because the service wants a SAML token.
Right.
So now the client doesn't need to have the services certificate directly. It can just go talk to a credential issuer who can generate the appropriate credential to talk to the service.
Okay, so that's sort of that brokered authentication, really.
Sure.
You're trusting that SAML token from this issuer that you trust.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the federated credentials are issued by a third party, and they're based on a credential that the client already provides. And you can support arbitrary credentials. As long as that credential issuer can generate that credential, a machine can ask for whatever it wants. So this does us a lot of good. For one thing, the the service doesn't have to trust anyone except the credential issuer. So you get trust relationships across organizations. You delegate claim checks to dedicated sources. So the only people checking claims right now are the credential issuers. Every machine doesn't need to check claims. And you get rich credential support, because as long as the credential issuer can take care of it, the machines can ask for whatever credentials they want. So if we've got in our 101 machine network, now every machine only needs to have two certificates installed. It needs its own, and it needs the one of the credential issuer. Mm-hmm. And now when a new machine joins, it only needs to install two certificates, and the only other machine that needs to be upgraded is that credential issuer. It just needs to add one more certificate.
So that sounds like a lot less headache there.
It is. And you know, this one also has parallels to real life, which I think is often a way we could see how efficient something is.
Okay.
If it happens in the real world, it's got to be worthwhile. If we go back to that bar example.
You like bars, don't you?
things happen. If we go back to that bar example, this happens all the time. Often we'll walk into a bar and we won't be able to even get to the bartender because we'll be stopped by a bouncer.
Uh-huh.
So now we're not presenting our credential to the bouncer. We're presenting a credential to the bouncer who examines it.
Which is the big burly dude that stands by the door, right?
Okay. Who examines it and then generates a new credential for us. So we get a stamp on the wrist or something
uh-huh.
like that.
Okay.
And this does the same thing. It facilitates trust relationships. The bartender doesn't need to trust me. She only needs to trust the bouncer. It delegates claim checks, so the bartender doesn't need to mix fabulous drinks and also recognize licenses from the 50 states. She
right.
can just concentrate on mixing, and the bouncer will take care of the recognition. And we've got rich credential supports. The bartender can ask for whatever stamp on the hand she wants as long as the bouncer can generate it.
Oh, my. Well, we are out of time. I know you're just like, all we got to was secure. We didn't even get to reliable or transacted, man. You know, it's all this talk about bars and bartenders, you know, it's Friday afternoon. I don't know, I'm kind of, just makes me want to give up on this thing. Okay, but hey, I love getting your notes. Here's a great note from Rob in Adelaide, Australia. Rob says he listens to ArtCast when he's on his way to work, although his commute isn't long enough. I guess you don't have those big traffic jams there in Adelaide, huh? But he's finding that there are so many shows he can just kind of skip over the ones he's not too interested in, but there's so many more, and he's loving it. So thanks, Rob. I love hearing from you guys. Send me a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next time on ArtCast.
Next time on ArtCast, I'll meet the
board. You can see this poor guy has a headache because it's so hard.
Ron Jacobs.
It just makes me hurt just looking at him.
And Ami Vora again. She rocks.
Things are reliable only until the end of the world.
ArtCast is a production of the Microsoft Architecture Strategy Team. All rights reserved. No mountain too high, no valley too low. Void where prohibited except where allowed by law. All similarities to real persons are purely coincidental. You need not be present to win. Employees of Microsoft, its partners, and customers are not eligible except those who have 2 years.